when the World War II breaks out, the Roosevelt administration and their allies take the opportunity to carry out repressive measures against the labor movement again, but this time with the full and active collaboration of the CPUSA, as they did here, as the CPGB became like enthusiastic cheerleaders for Winston Churchill for 5 years. They basically told the proletariat that class struggle was turned off, which again, a disgraceful position and rightly opposed by many in the more radical sections of the U.S. labor movement. But I mentioned all of that,
Alex,
because...
Wasn't it kind of because, I mean, at least in the Canadian case, that kind of thing happened to some extent because when the Nazis attacked Russia, so the communists in Canada, the Communist Party in Canada, they switched their position on the war and Canada's involvement in the war because they saw it now as an anti-fascist endeavor, an anti-fascist war. So... that they saw it as like an attempt to destroy the USSR by Hitler, and that's why they switched their position.
Yes, but that's true, but that should never unconditional defense of the USSR was like the policy of the Trotskyist SWP as well, but they never went down the route of saying that domestic strikes should be suppressed.
Yeah, that's
what the CPUSA did, and it's what the CPGB did as well.
I don't think Canada did that. So ours is a little better.
So, like, it's one thing to say, this gets into another topic, but it's one thing to say and to rightly say that we stand for unconditional defense of the gains of the October Revolution. We stand for unconditional defense of the USSR. That's, like, something that Trotsky insisted on, anybody who was a serious revolutionary insisted on. It's another thing to side with the domestic ruling class and suppressing the workers.
Yeah, fair. Yeah. Their no strike pledge was really bad.
Yeah, so I mentioned that because like it's a horrible prefiguring of what's about to come, essentially.
Yeah.
Which is that the CPUSA, which should have been the leadership of the working class, had basically given up that role and had surrendered completely and had been incorporated into one of the two bourgeois parties. We won't go into like the labor movement in World War II, only to say that the in the US as in Britain, the hyper exploitation that was carried out in World War II was tremendously profitable for the US ruling class. Hugely so. We deal with popular myths around like things like World War II all the time, but like the idea of the nation all coming together is a bourgeois myth. Because there was gigantic profits made in World War II by the American bourgeoisie directly on the back of the hyper-exploitation of the American working class. And this leads to like a massive burst of class struggle after World War II when there's a switch back to civilian production. So like 1946, you get the widespread demobilization starts of the American armed forces. You get a switch back to civilian production, but you then see the working class reacts by taking out a series of militant strikes in 1946, where there was up to 4.5 million workers on strike across all the key sections of the covered by the productive working class, like coal, oil, steel, auto industry, telecoms, maritime, and railroad. All of which across 1946, there was really big strike action in. And a lot of which was successful in forcing forward their demands. And that scares the shit out of the US bourgeoisie. And that's what sets us on the road towards what became the Taft-Hartley Act, and that which was to be called McCarthyism. But to say a little bit about that, McCarthyism is the wrong word for it. There was already the House and American Activities Committee, which he became infamous for, was already in operation. It had been in operation continuously since the 30s. It was only disbanded and sort of renamed in the 70s. So this is a sort of reactionary committee that they have in place. But let's just look at like where we are in 1946. Like World War II has ended. The Soviet Union's Red Army stands in half of Europe. There's a dispute between like the capitalist powers and the USSR over the future of Germany and the future of Europe. But in Europe, you have gigantic organizations of the working class in a very powerful position in France and in Italy. and you will see them rapidly reemerge in places like Germany. And the US ruling class is being forced into some major concessions to try and stop the advance of the organized working class in France and in Italy especially. And of course, then you have a very militant mood in Britain as well. So the US ruling class is in a position where it is desperately trying to preserve capitalism. And so it makes complete sense from their class point of view to, first of all, stop the advance of the working class in their homeland. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think...